Hi, this is Farah Yurdesu. Today I'm in Aztec Town in New Mexico. And my guest is Roy Forbes. Hi, Roy. How are you?
Hi, Farah. We're doing good. Enjoying the nice weather out here.
Roy Forbes is the producer and director of a very interesting documentary movie, Fallen Angels. And I want to listen everything from him about this production, about this movie.
Yeah, Fallen Angels was an idea, a project that we had started about 3 years ago. And after attending the Aztec symposium 4 years ago and learning more about the Aztec UFO crash, it really caught my interest, especially with a lot of the new information that's been coming out on the radar facilities here in New Mexico, the secret radar facilities from the 1940s. That could have played a role in the crash at Aztec, as well as Roswell.
So, when did you start to make your investigation about the UFO crashes?
After the symposium here in Aztec 4 years ago, we started to look deeper into the Roswell crash, the Aztec crash, and also the one out in Kingman, Arizona. And possibly these radar facilities would have played a role in in possibly affecting the guidance systems or propulsion of the craft that had come down in 1947, 48, and 53 in Kingman.
Do you think that UFO crashes, several UFO crashes that we have been hearing about, are one of the most important physical evidences of extraterrestrial visits?
Yes, I do. I'm sure that the craft that has been recovered certainly is proof. Whether we're going to see it or not, that's a different story. And with the discovery of these radar facilities, we now have a possible cause that could have brought these ships down, whether it was intentional or not.
So do you think that probably it was intentional? They wanted to crash them with purpose?
I think possibly, I mean, I can't speak for the government programs, but I think it's possible in the beginning it might have been an accident. They might have had these facilities up and running. Possibly a craft flew through these microwave beams and crashed. That possibly could have been the cause of Roswell. Subsequent to that, once they realized that this is what's possible, I think it's very likely that they did start to use microwave radar systems to bring the ships down, not to be fired on like a missile, but to momentarily interrupt guidance or propulsion systems.
As far as your investigations, do you have any idea when was the last UFO crash it was reported?
There's constant reports all around the world, right up until several years ago. We've focused pretty much on the earlier ones, and the number of crashes per year has really gone down, but there still continues to be reports of UFOs found.
Because in your movie, in Fallen Angels, you were interviewing some very famous names from UFO investigations. One of them was Linda Moulton Howe, and the other one was Stanton Friedman. And they had very interesting claims about the UFO crashes. For instance, Linda Moulton Howe says that after 1956 or 58, there isn't any UFO crashes.
What she said was that the crashes appear to have at least slowed down. And the thought there was that possibly there was a military directive, a military order that was given to bring these ships down. Mm-hmm. And the theory there now seems to be coming out more and more that there was a retaliation as well, and possibly they were firing on our aircraft. There seems to be more research out there that Stanton Friedman is doing as well, showing that we had lost a lot of military aircraft. If that being the case, possibly then the military said, you know what, it's time that we stop this, and we stop firing on them, they stop firing on us, if that is the case.
When did you finish your movie exactly?
The film was finished November of 2006. after a little over 2.5 years of production.
So when was it released?
The very first showing was at the Laughlin, Nevada UFO International Congress, and we entered in the film festival, and it won the EBE Award for Best Historical UFO Documentary.
So this is a very important step in UFO documentaries. But what will be your future projects? Are you going to release this movie in some other movie festivals? Or are you going to send it to international festivals?
I think that we will probably target a few other film festivals around the country. The next project, we kind of thought this was going to be a pilot for a series of films on UFO crash retrievals. Mm-hmm. And the premise that I've tried to do in this film that's a little bit different than other films I've seen is that we want to bring the viewer along with us on the trip. It's not sitting in a classroom listening to a documentary. Mm-hmm. The person who's watching it is actually traveling with the film crew to these locations. Also, being in the American Southwest, the scenery out here is absolutely beautiful. So you have the ability to enjoy the scenery as well.
I watched your movie today, and I'm very impressed. Of course, I'm sure the rest of the viewers were very impressed about it, but we saw a flying object. You caught a flying object. What was that?
During the filming of Fallen Angels, we were up at Nellis Air Force Base bombing range, and we were videotaping a live bombing demonstration that was being done. In my vehicle, we have the ability to monitor this operation, and we heard the controllers clear the airspace over the target area for a C-130 Spectra gunship to come in. And we were videotaping the gunship as it was orbiting over the target. Didn't realize till we got back to the studio and put the tape in that a very bright white round disc object travels from the bottom of the screen to the top of the screen in 1 second. The gunship is flying along maybe 250 miles an hour. This object appears behind the gunship. It's traveling at a tremendous rate of speed. The interesting thing is where we were filming this operation was 50 miles due south of Groom Lake. Certainly wasn't an aircraft for two reasons. One, at that speed that appears on the film, and we heard the airspace being cleared for the gunship to come in.
So how many miles did you travel since you started to shoot your documentary? And how many different states you have visited?
Thousands of miles, traveling all through Arizona, up into Nevada, and New Mexico, and down to the lower sections of Colorado. Pretty much the Four Corners region.
And I'm sure there are many, many UFO crash cases, but we don't hear all of them. For instance, the Kingman case. Most of the people weren't familiar about it. It wasn't a very, very popular one. How did you start to feel interested in Kingman case?
The Kingman case was an interesting one that took place in 1953. There was some real good documentation on that case, and there was a diary from a gentleman who had participated in going to the crash site. It was one of those that was kind of mulling around for many, many years.
So are there any crash cases that you are planning to shoot soon?
Yeah, like I had said earlier, this is a pilot for a series of films that are going to look at UFO crash retrievals.
Did you have your own UFO sightings, observations, before you started to shoot your movie?
I can't say that I looked up at the sky and saw a flying saucer. I do a lot of photography, and I do a lot of lightning photography. And several years ago, I was filming in the area around Kingman at sunset, and the camera took many photographs of lightning, and we had got one print back which shows a clearly round silver disc-shaped object approximately 900 feet above the ground, and I'm estimating maybe 5 or 6 miles from my spot. This did not appear in the photograph prior or the photograph after, and the object was in the emulsion layer of the film. This wasn't digital, it was regular 35 millimeter. We were shooting about 3 to 4 frames a second, so I didn't see it. Whatever it was, the camera did catch it.
Today was the last day of Aztec UFO Symposium, and after the conference was over, we had the opportunity to go and visit the Aztec UFO crash site. It was a big surprise for me to be able to go there with you and with your friends. So thank you very much for that nice and very surprising invitation. So it was my first time in the UFO crash site, but you know the road very well in the middle of the desert. And I know you have been there a couple of times. So what happened there in your previous visits?
Well, the actual crash site is about 10, 12 miles northeast of the city of Aztec, New Mexico. It's out in a location called Hart Canyon. Hart Canyon and the road that it's on used to be an old stagecoach trail that runs from Durango, Colorado, down to Farmington, New Mexico. And there's a loop up there called Arkansas Loop. And as you come around this loop, there's a large mesa to your left, and that's where the craft allegedly had come down. Now, they refer to it as a crash. This craft was not crumpled up or damaged like the Roswell ship. This craft appeared, as we're told, pretty much intact. There was a small cracked window, and the bodies inside were pretty burned up and charred. But it appeared as though that it had basically a hard landing, or pretty much landed there in a hurry. But it's at this curve called Arkansas Loop.
So why do you think that the bodies were burned, but there was very little damage with the craft?
I'm not a scientist, but if we go back to the microwave theory, it seems very possible that if this craft flew through the microwave beams, that if all three of these stations were operating at Alvado, Continental Divide, Moriarty, the witnesses say the ship came up from the south over Cuba. This craft would have flown through those beams. It would kind of make sense that that's what would have done the damage to the extraterrestrial bodies that were inside and not had physically damaged the ship.
So how big was the ship? Do you have any idea?
The stories that I've been told is it was between 99 and 100 feet. Perfect lenticular shape, almost like a lens-shaped craft, and approximately 18 feet high.
So the area is very difficult to reach. I mean, you have a huge Hummer truck, but even though it was very difficult, we were jumping in your car, in your Hummer, and in some parts it wasn't easy. So how do you think that military forces got there, and how did you pick it up, the huge aircraft?
I think that obviously they were aware that the ship came down if they were operating their radar systems, and if the radar systems were transmitting back the location of the craft, and if these radar systems were the culprit in possibly bringing the ship down. I'm sure the military knew exactly where the ship was, and that's probably a good reason why they got there as quickly as they did. It is a remote area. I'm sure it was a whole heck of a lot more difficult to get back there in 1948 than it was for us today. But their ability to do that is, that's what they do. As far as getting the ship out and retrieving the craft, I honestly don't have an idea how they would have done that with such a large craft.
So I don't want to give away more information about your movie because I want many people to get it and to watch it. So do you have a website? How can we reach you, and how can the UFO lovers can get your movie?
If anyone does want information on the film Fallen Angels, you can email me at magic, M-A-J-I-C, at frontiernet.net, and just send me an email, and I'll respond with the information.
Thank you very much for this interview, and I'm wishing you all the good luck with this production and with your future productions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
We'll be in Roswell from July 4th until that Sunday. The 5th, we'll actually be at the Civic Center with a table, the Jerry Pippin Show. We'll have Jane Swartley there, Roberta Scott, Dr. Rita Louise, and others. Come by and say hello to us. We'll have all kinds of DVDs and even Jerry Pippin Show UFO Files t-shirts, among other things. And a great selection of great DVDs, I must say, including the Phoenix Lights and the Fast Walkers DVD. So we'll see you in Roswell this July 4th through the following Sunday.
Hi, everybody. Here we are in Aztec Town. And today I met a very interesting personality. She's Tammy. And she is a Native Indian lady. She came to listen my speech today in the conference, and I was talking about ancient Turkish traditions and civilizations, and she told me that we have lots in common with Native Indians, and I agree with her. Hi, Tammy, how are you?
I'm doing fine. It's a good day.
Are you enjoying the conference?
Definitely.
So you told me about the skinwalkers. Skinwalkers is a Native Indian tradition. What's happening around here?
Well, it's on the reservation, the Navajo Reservation is where it's taking place at. And there's been skinwalkers ever since we can remember. And skinwalkers are basically shapeshifters. They're people who are, I guess you would call them, they're intertwined with entities mm-hmm. or spirits. And the spirits can be, well, either good or bad, depending on what the person requests.
Did you see any of those shapeshifters?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them, but not per se up close. And it's from a distance, real quick, something happening. Like, more or less, my sister, Misty, she had seen some up close, and she's actually chased them. One of my brothers had followed one, and according to legend, the Native Americans believe that if you see one and it's not involved with going after you, and you happen to catch it in the act, it has to die in 3 days. And my brother had ran and followed one with a friend of his from out of the service up on top of Big Red Rock. And they ran all the way to the end, and they could follow it because of the tracks. And they watched the tracks change from wolf tracks mm-hmm. to human tracks yeah. in the snow. It happened in the wintertime, and it went to the corner of the mountain. And he couldn't run away, so he just sat there. And when they ran up to him, he was naked, sitting there, and he told them, "You killed me." And 3 days later, we read in the newspaper that a man had froze to death up there.
This is extremely interesting. So when did this happen?
This happened probably in 1980, 82, I'd gather around there.
Where was the exact location?
It was Red Rock over there on the south side of Gallup, New Mexico, going towards the Zuni Reservation.
So what is a shapeshifter exactly? Is this a bat spirit? Is this an interdimensional being? Is this an extraterrestrial?
Well, actually, a human being that gains powers from these entities when they grant them powers. And the human chants all night and concentrates on people. Like, say, if they were against you, they would somehow get a piece of your hair or your clothing and whatnot, and then they would chant about it, and they would chant to the spirit or the entity, and the entity would grant them whatever. But they'd have to go through certain procedures over years in order to be able to get these powers, in order to shape shift. And when they do, they would put on a wolfskin clothing and chant until they become what they're shape shifting into. Mm-hmm. And then they would have extra powers where they could actually run and keep up with a vehicle going at 75, 85 miles an hour, and they could run alongside it.
So what are the entities who give this power to the humans?
Some of the Navajo legend says that there are good ones and then there are bad ones, depending. And usually the person that does this, they would call him a medicine man, or in your language, a shaman.
Shaman.
Mm-hmm,
yes.
Be it good or bad. So they get those from the entities that... I'm not too sure what the entities would be like. Some are benevolent, some are malevolent, depending on... And I would say they're probably like your... Djinns.
Yes, we call them djinns, and Western world, in a kind of, call them spirits, and sometimes we know that in alien abductions, before or after the abduction, abductees see a wolf, a bird, an owl, a cat, a deer. So maybe we are thinking about or talking about the same entities under different names, because we are living in different times and in different cultures. So is there any way to protect yourself against these shapeshifter human?
Well, a lot of the people, they go to a medicine man that goes against these and knows what's going on in the spirit world, and so they'll go and get them to help them. But a lot of times I've known for myself, the name of Jesus Christ is the one that is above all and can put a stop to anything, is what I found out through, no matter what culture you're in or where you're at, that name is very powerful in the spirit world. And so because of that, he can actually put a stop to this. Like they can go through doors, they can walk right through a door, they can walk through a wall. They can travel through time and be there in no time where you are.
Just like the djinns in my tradition.
Yes, and they can do this, and they can also speak to you telepathically or make you freeze and become paralyzed.
Just like the aliens.
Yeah, a little bit of both, I guess. But the Navajo is believed that there's a difference between the aliens and the entities. Yeah. Yes.
So, spiritually, what is your belief? I mean, do you keep your Navajo traditions and belief, or are you a Christian?
Well, I know the Navajo tradition, I've been raised in it. But as I grew older, I've also known about the Christian beliefs, I wouldn't really call it Christian, because I've met a lot of people who say they're Christian, but they're religious. And they actually are, to me, more evil than the Navajo culture is what they believe in, because there's good and bad in everything. So I guess what it would be for me is looking into the spirit world, knowing that there's another dimension, and in that dimension is a whole different world, like a lot of Navajos would see. And they wouldn't see Jesus as a religion or, you know, a Christianity type. They would see him as God, as the highest of all that you would pray to, and they would give him a name.
Yes.
And so
yes.
That's what I believe.
So how did you get involved in UFO stuff?
It happens on the Navajo reservation all the time, and for a while there I thought we were being guinea pigs because we were chased on the reservation, and that the government would allow it to happen, because, you know, who counts the Navajos? They're nobody. They're just Indians according to culture and the way it is around here. So we...
Do you live in a reservation?
Yes, I do.
What is happening there?
There's a lot of abductions. There's a lot, like... cattle mutilations, and people that are out fishing, they disappear, and you try to go tell somebody about it, and then nobody cares. They're like, yeah, you guys live over there, you know, who cares about you? So they do, and there's a lot of testing going on in the Navajo Reservation, too.
There's even a creature that lives in the mountains that has the alien form, the big head, the long arms, the big feet, and it runs around on the reservation there. A lot of people seen it, the sheriff seen it. The workers out there seen it, and it's kind of a reptilian alien thing, but it lives out there in the mountains, and people see it.
So is this a reptilian?
Yeah.
So did you see it?
I haven't, but a lot of people around there have, and one of my relatives have, yeah.
So is this only one creature or more than one?
Well, if it is more than one, they all look alike, you know.
So are there any cases, reported cases, any attacks? This reptilian entity attacked to anybody?
Did you hear something like this?
Not to my knowledge. It's just that they see it around, you know, and it comes close to houses and whatnot, but mostly it stays in the mountains. And they find cattle mutilations and stuff like that, and they say that that could be part of the reason why this is happening to the cattle and the sheep and the horses, because the Navajos have got a lot of herds of animals, you know.
Are there any abduction cases in your family?
Well, if there is, I wouldn't really say that I'm aware of it, because there's one that followed my little brother for a while when he was in high school, and he tried to call the radio stations and them, but they wouldn't believe him, and they just said, well, we're going to call the police if you keep harassing us.
It was a UFO?
Yes, following him. And actually, it went up to the house. My mom saw it. We've all seen it. And it, for some reason, it was following my youngest brother. And he lives...
The elderlies there that live there, the elderly Navajos, believe that behind what's called Red Rock is a place where the crafts lift up and go in. There's a little water source there, and the elderlies have seen it through times, this light that comes up out of there, and it goes back and returns in that area. And that's where we've seen these crafts come and go as well.
So how can I speak with those elderlies?
I could try to see if they'd want to talk to you, you know, but they're kind of shy, and, you know, they believe in, yeah, like my grandma, she talks about it, that she had seen it since she was a young child. So pretty much to them, it's always been around. They've always been around.
Well, as I explained in my presentation, Turkish people's origins are from Central Asia, just like Native Indians, and we are coming from the same source.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning, Turkish nations were shamanic too, just like you. So I'm a kind of your cousin. So maybe your grandmother would like to speak with me too.
She might, yeah, especially she finds out what your beliefs are, because yours are a lot like the Navajo culture. I was impressed.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like listening to you, and that you're from the same, you're just from over that side of the hill or the ocean.
Changing woman who started the whole generation of Navajos. She came out, and the coyote, they don't go with the wolf, they go with the coyote, is the one that started with the two twins, and that's why they have the four sacred mountains, the different stones, because all of it started from changing woman who came out from the ground and mixed with the, I guess, the coyote, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, these traditional stories are very much same in my country, in my nation too. It is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Because for us, Sirius connection, wolf connection is very, very important. And we have basic two traditions, creation stories. We are coming from wolves, and we are coming from extraterrestrials, I mean, just like yours. So when was the last time somebody reported a shapeshifter, a skinwalker, in the location that you live?
In the location that I live was probably about, when was the last one that...
They used to run right on the...
Yeah, they used to, well, actually, in Twin Lakes, yeah. Just recently, about 2 months ago, it was running around the house there where we live.
Mm-hmm.
And they were beating the drums first. It started with beating up the drums, and then they were running around the house where we live,
mm-hmm.
and started making noises and stuff and trying to enter the house. So it was a battle going on right there in Twin Lakes.
So is there any connection with the voice, with the sound, and with these entities?
With the what?
The drum sound.
Oh, yeah.
The music. What is the effect?
They chant. They have to put themselves in a state of mind, a trance, a meditation, and the beating of the drums does that for them. They do that, and they do that, and they do that until they become what they're going to change into,
yeah.
And then they go after the people that they're going after for whatever reason. They could hate you for the land, for something that they believe that they need from you, anything. It doesn't matter. Or perhaps somebody was angry with you, so they went to go get this person and pay them to go after you. That's
and
another
that's
thing.
The thing about the shapeshifters there is the reason they change their shape is to harm somebody. You never mm-hmm. seen them change their shape to do something good for somebody. It's always for harm, because A person will come and tell them what's going on with their problems, so they'll sing and chant, and they'll change their shape to a bird, an owl, an eagle, and even the skinwalkers will go over and they'll do something to the person that had cried about their grief in the first place. So they do something. They could even kill you, they could make you sick, they could change your mind to make you think you're crazy, they could do a lot of things just when they change their shape. And most of the times, it's not done for good. So.
Do you remember Count Dracula Vampires?
Yes.
Vampire? Mm-hmm. Vampire changes its shape too. Mm-hmm. It becomes a bat.
Yeah.
After attacking the pupil, the victim, mm-hmm. then it becomes a bat, okay. a kind of a bird, and flies away.
Yeah. Well, the way the Navajos are, in order for them to get this power, they have to kill somebody that's close to them, somebody they love, maybe. If it's a daughter or somebody, a son, their firstborn son, they have to kill that person like a sacrifice in order for them to obtain this power. And the more power they get, the more they can out-of-body experience, they can shape-shift, they can sit there and blow a whistle and it'll send a stone to somebody and kill them. They can do a lot of things when they obtain this power, but they have to sacrifice somebody that they really love in order to get this power.
So it's a kind of blood energy, just like the vampires, because vampire needs the blood of the victims. So in fact, it means that these entities who give the power to the humans need the blood energy.
If they sacrifice to this entity a loved one, so it's not really the blood. It's I would say the soul.
Soul is more important, is it?
Yes, it is.
So, what kind of souls do you need? For instance, do they prefer the man? Do they prefer the woman?
They prefer the one that you would love the most. That way it seems like it would give them the entity would get more out of that mm-hmm. from you if you give the one that you love mm-hmm. their soul. That one is what it is.
So you are living in two worlds, in your own traditional Navajo world and in the modern American life. So, which one is better?
For me, I would say the Navajo life, because it's a simple life. They live more true than the modern world, and the modern world to me distorts things, you know. And the Navajo way, even though there's culture behind it and everything, the people are more true than the modern world. In other words, the modern world is more distorted. I would say.
So, do you have your own children?
No, I don't have children of my own, but children in the Navajo way, because we all take care of each other.
Oh, really?
Yes, we take care of grandmother, grandfather, and mother, and father, and daughter, and son, and grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. They tend to find themselves living all as one and taking care of each other, and so your sister's children become your children, your also. Brother's children are your children, and mm-hmm. so we all take care of each other like that, and mm-hmm. so it's an extended family still to this day.
Very beautiful. And what about you? I mean, how do you feel? How do you feel in the today's Western world, and how do you feel in your traditional life?
I prefer living on the reservation, the same. Yes, it's simple. It's not fast-paced. Mm-hmm. And you're not caught up in all this stuff that the world feeds on material things. Mm-hmm. You have what you have. You have your shelter. You have your water. You have your simple things. Your necessities is what you have, and that's really what you need to live on. And you get into this fast-paced world. People are competing for this. They want something better than their neighbors, and you find yourself falling into that trap where mm-hmm. money means everything. But when you live on the reservation, it's a slow pace, it's comfortable, and you don't have to compete with your neighbors. You just live everyday life.
Well, I mean, speaking with you is very special for me, because when I first saw a picture from an Navajo reservation, I guess I was 6 years old. So I saw some photographs. Probably it was taken from this area. So I was very excited. Then, of course, I was in Istanbul, I was in Turkey, and I would never, ever imagine that I would meet Navajo people in my life in the future. So thank you very much for spending time with me for this interview. I can speak with you forever. But thanks a lot. So is there anything else that you want to add before we finish?
I never thought I'd meet anybody from Istanbul, so I'm happy too.
Thank you very much.
I'm curious about that underground city that you talked about there and what really was there and all. That's really something, that underground city. It has to link to everything today for some reason.
Underground cities of Turkey are very famous. In fact, the total number is more than 100 all over the country. But the two of them that I showed you are the open ones, open to public ones. But the rest are not open. And they are dated to 5,000 years ago, and nobody knows who made them, who built them. So there is a really extraterrestrial touch there. And I, as explained, time portals, ley lines are all over the... Yes.
Experienced any time portals or know anybody who has?
As I explained in my presentation, a whole British regiment was abducted on one of those ley lines. Yes.
Yeah, but you weren't even born then, so...
No. In my own, I had my own experiences with different... in different places, in different circumstances. So thank you very much. It's a big pleasure speaking with you. Thank you. Enjoy you.
Look us up, we'll take you out.
Definitely. Oh, I would like to. Thank you very much. Thank you.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com.
Hi, this is Farah Yurduzu. Today, I'm in Aztec Town in New Mexico, and we have just finished the Aztec UFO Symposium. Right now, I am with famous, international, famous Dennis Balthazar. I hope I said correct your name. Hi, how are you this evening?
I'm doing good. That was pretty close on the name. Thank you.
You are welcome. It was my pleasure sharing this wonderful weekend with such a famous name with you. And I'm amazed of your articles. We are writing in the same UFO magazine, you and I, so we have lots in common. What happened over this weekend for you? Are you happy at the end of this weekend?
This was the 10th year for the Aztec Symposium, and I have been fortunate enough to be involved with every one of them for the last 10 years, either as a speaker or as a master of ceremonies. And I really look at the symposium here in Aztec as kind of a family thing for me, because when we come up here so often, we know all the people that put on the symposium, and of course a lot of the attendees are people that we've met over the last 10 years. It's one of the few symposiums that I attend that is really intended for the serious UFO investigator. It's not much of a carnival atmosphere. It's serious UFO researchers given plenty of time to present their information, their research, and then given the opportunity to meet with the people that are here visiting one-on-one, and that's a good thing because a lot of these people never get to meet the researchers up close and personal. So this is one of the few where this happens, and they have a meet-and-greet dinner or a banquet on the first night where we go around and talk to the different people that are here and visit with them, answer questions. The symposium itself runs a day or two with speakers going on for an hour and a half to 2 hours each. And then the final day, they have a panel discussion where the audience, again, has the opportunity to ask more questions of the speakers.
So this was the 10th year of ASEC UFO Symposium, but I would like to ask you a personal question. How many years for you in UFO field as an investigator?
I've been interested, my background, as everyone knows, is civil engineering, and I retired from the Texas Department of Transportation in 1996 with 33 years in civil engineering, 3 years in the Army, before that in an engineering battalion. Been interested in the UFO field for 22 years and doing it professionally full-time for the last 10 or 11 years. It's just fascinating research, and I have to say that doing engineering work was much easier than doing this work, because I didn't have to fight with the government and the critics and the debunkers and all that when I was doing the engineering work. But I think it's important research because I think the truth needs to be brought out, and I don't know if I'll live long enough for that to happen, but I think the truth is important, and particularly for our children and our grandchildren.
So, what is the biggest danger for a UFO investigator in this field? Extraterrestrial invasion, debunkers, UFO cults and sects, or disinformation?
Ooh, that's a good question. The debunkers are needed. The critics, the debunkers are needed in this field to keep me and the other serious researchers honest. We're challenged, and that's good. The cults I have a little problem with because as a serious researcher, this could be the biggest story of the millennium. Consequently, for example, the Roswell incident, there's 2,000 websites on Roswell. I have one of the top 10 websites. I spent way too much time putting out fires and trying to correct information that's on the internet, and the internet is a good thing, but there's so much information on the internet that's not true. It's done by second, third, fourth hand researchers. I don't call that a researcher. What I call a researcher is someone that goes out in the field, interviews the witnesses, or like in my case, you go to the crash sites, you look at the dirt, you do the work that you have to do as a researcher. So those are a major problem. The internet can be good. There's a lot of information there, but there's a lot of information you have to be careful what you believe.
Yes, and recently we have a new case in the last 1 year, Serpo Planet, Serpo case, Serpo files. And in the last 1 or 1.5 years, many people started to get long emails about a possible Serpo and late Serpo planet. So what is your opinion about it?
I'm not sure.
Serpo, S-E-R-P-O. It is a famous case, and some of the investigators or some of the people who report this case, they said that in the late 1960s, American government sent a team of science men to another planet, to Serpo planet, and they stayed there for a while, around 10 years, 12 years, and some of them came back, some of them didn't want to come back, they preferred to stay in Serpo planet, mm-hmm. And two of them died there. And now everybody wants to know, is this a real case or is this a hoax? So what do you think?
I think that situation and that particular incident and case is similar to when we went to the moon. There are people that say we never went to the moon. Mm-hmm. I met astronaut Edgar Mitchell a few years ago, and he went to the moon. Of course, NASA, everybody knows what NASA stands for, or they think they know, really. What I think NASA stands for is never a straight answer, NASA. But we went to the moon, but I don't know why we didn't go back to the moon. Mm-hmm. They're talking about doing that now. These rumors that you hear, and with this research, the main thing that you have to do is confirm and verify information. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're out in la-la land, really, looking for information, and it has to be proven. Yes. We have a situation with this field of research that maybe doesn't cut it. We have to have factual information.
And I agree with you 100% about internet. Internet can be a wonderful information source, but at the same time, it can be a trap. It can be very dangerous.
Another trap that we have is the media, a big trap. The media has an agenda. I don't know that they're being paid to use disinformation. I don't know that factually. But I do know the many documentaries that I've been involved in, the end result is nothing like I expected after doing the interview. An example is the National Geographic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You would expect that the National Geographic would do an upfront, honest documentary on this subject. I spent many hours with them filming last year, and they had a show that aired a couple weeks ago about Roswell, and it was a total disaster. So much so that I wrote an editorial on it. I expected more from the National Geographic Channel. But it looks to me like documentaries and the media is based primarily on ratings and profit, not on factual information.
So far, how many documentaries or how many UFO-related shows you did?
I have been involved since 1998 with over 350 interviews of one sort or another. That could be radio interviews, television documentaries, TV live shows, news media, about 350 since 1998.
So this one, our 351st, 51?
This would be about 351, yeah.
Thank you. So there is something else about television shows and UFO relationships. Lately, we started to see many reality shows about UFOs, and they are very entertainment-related. But I really think that we don't need entertainment in UFO field, because in every part of our life, in social life, is full of entertainment. Everything is based on entertainment. So at least in UFO field, we need to get serious things. And lately there are new reality shows about UFOs, and people who has no background, no professional background in UFO field, trying to become stars in UFO investigation. So you are very famous, very international, and certified UFO investigator. So what are you going to do?
Well, I think one thing that may be a positive to all of that is exposure. And I'm believing that the government may permit all these shows to be aired. Good example was the X-Files show. Mm-hmm. It had a lot of factual information in the show. Mm-hmm. That was good. But it had a lot of disinformation, misinformation also. But maybe they're trying to educate the public. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then the more they get out there, the more educated the public will be and accept this. However, I think that many of these shows don't do us any justice. And I totally agree with you on the reality thing. This is a serious subject.
Very serious.
And if they don't take us seriously, and in the news media, if you have a report of sighting, when it is reported, and that's very seldom that it even makes the news, then it's done in a light form, which makes it look bad. And that's not good either. You know, people, the general public will say, well, you know, that's another one of them UFO stories. Don't worry about it. It's more than that. Mm-hmm. If there is something out there and they're coming here, we need to know this. We need to be told and be told the truth. And I personally think that what is happening is that the government of the United States, on all the crashes we've had, whether that be Aztec, Kingman, Arizona, Roswell, Kecksburg, once those are proven to have been actual extraterrestrial crashes, then I think we need to know that information. But if they are real, and I'm saying if they're real, then I think the military in the United States wants to know that technology, because we can't go there. And if they're coming here, they have technology and knowledge that we cannot not comprehend. Mm-hmm. And until we understand that and how their system works, how their propulsion works, how they travel across light years, that would be an advantage to our military. And until that comes about, I don't think they're going to tell us the truth.
Mm-hmm. So are you going to be in Roswell this year, in 4 months later?
I will be in Roswell. I live in Roswell, and I was asked a couple of months ago, well, several months ago, by the mayor of Roswell. The city of Roswell has taken over the festival for the 60th anniversary coming up July 5th through the 8th. The last few years, it's been run by the International UFO Museum and has been less than successful. The attendance has been down. There wasn't any community involvement from other people in the city that wanted to be involved with it, so the mayor decided that the city would take it over. And he insisted that it would be family-oriented and that it would involve the community. He set up a planning committee comprised of three co-chair persons. He has assigned 16 people to the committee. I'm one of them. And I've been doing radio interviews all over the world. I've been contacting websites to show the logo for the festival. Probably 50, 60 of them have put the logo up. We're anticipating a big turnout this year. We have about 30 speakers already scheduled. Six of those are coming from Mexico.
Oh, really?
The first day, July 5th, there will be six speakers, six researchers from Mexico that will come up, and they're coming on their own. They want it to be part of it. So they will come up and share their research with us, with the audience, and these lectures will be done both in Spanish and English. And then we have people like Richard Dolan, John Greenewald Jr., Stephen Bassett, Farah is coming. Jerry Pippen will be there with his radio show. George Noory will be there doing Coast to Coast every night, a big international UFO show. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of family activity. We have a carnival coming in that does the New Mexico State Fair every year. We have different activities for the children. We have soccer matches. We have mud wrestling. We have volleyball. We have a night golf tournament. There'll be a night alien parade. This big fireworks display. I mean, the list of activities goes on, and you probably won't be able to see everything in the 4 or 5 days.
This will be my first visit to Roswell, and I'm very, very excited, and I cannot wait to go there. And talking about the internet and the power of the internet, I know that you have a wonderful website. It's a very active website. And today in the panel, you were talking about your young fans. You have been getting emails from children. What's happening in the children's world and aliens?
Well, the one thing that I have tried to do as a researcher is have young people get involved, because I'm getting old. Stanton Friedman is getting older than I am. They used to call him the father of ufology. I call him the grandfather of ufology. We need young people involved. And any time that I can find young people that have an interest, I try to promote it. So what I've done is set up a link on my website at truthseeker@roswell.com, and it's called Kids Views on UFOs. And what that amounts to is children, this could be junior high or middle school or seniors in high school, junior college, even college students, who decide that they're going to write an article about UFOs. Most likely Roswell, because that's the most popular. So they will contact me and say, will you answer some questions from me? And I'm happy to do that. The first one I ever got, and I use this one all the time, because he was an eighth grader in New Jersey. He had written to a scientist and said he wanted to do this, and the scientist said, don't mess with it, I don't have time for it. So he wrote to me. He was downhearted and disappointed, and I said, yeah, I'd be happy to answer your questions. Yeah. Little did I know he would be sending me 21 questions that took 3 days to answer. But he sent me his report, and he got an A-plus on the grade, which I thought was great. So what I've done is tell these kids that, yeah, I'll help you do it, but you give me a copy of the report, and we'll put it on my website. And they think that's cool because they get their articles posted.
It is something wonderful that you are encouraging the young generation, because who knows, between them there will be new ufologists in the next 15 years, in the next 20 years. And probably they will be much more luckier than us. Maybe there will be a total disclosure then. Maybe they are going to have much more technology. But they are going to be saying that I got that answer from Denis Balthasar. Mm-hmm. And I started to this field because of him, thanks to him.
That'd be great.
Yes, so it is one of the biggest lucky things in a life of an investigator.
Well, and I found out my background is civil engineering. I'm brutally honest. I have a quote on my website, and I use it a lot of my lectures. Always telling the truth means never having to remember anything. And I try to live by that. I don't believe in the woo-woo stuff. I believe in factual information. I try to verify the information I have, but I never try to convince people of what this is about. Mm-hmm. I share my research for one reason, to make them think. And if they will think and question me and maybe do some research on their own, I think I've accomplished what I went after.
Very much. Very much. Thank you very much for this interview. Do you have anything else that you would like to say to Jerry Pippin Radio Show listeners?
Well, I'm familiar with Jerry Pippin's audience, and I love being on Jerry's show. I love the work that he does, and Rita and Larry and all of the crew. Look forward to everybody coming to Roswell in July. We're going to have a good time, and we'll do some more of this.
Yes. In that case, see you in Roswell. Thank you very much.
See you there.
Major sighting here.
On the 13th of March, weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently. And no one seems to be able to explain what it was.
And now, suddenly six amber orbs in a row, totally equidistant from each other, massive span across, pop up.
People say they saw strange lights.
A series of strange bright lights seen over the skies of Arizona gets a lot of people wondering.
There are another 10,000 Arizonans who saw the same thing.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Last night, shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three to
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing there to talk about.
The award-winning documentary by Dr. Lynn Kitar, The Phoenix Lights, is now available from shopjerrypippin.com. Order now. Supplies limited.